firehouse as options, and I manage that calendar. It is a full-time job, and we do it with excellence, and because we care about our neighborhood and because we care about the people that are coming to stay with us. So for me, it's this kind of opportunity is like a Facebook, but almost exemplified, because it's a way for us to connect with people all around the world, but not just through a computer. This is connecting us face-to-face with people and giving us that opportunity, which with technology in these days and age, that we're not getting. So I honestly, after today, I don't know how I would want you to vote on this, because I want to keep doing what I'm doing, and I want to be legal, and I want to fall in line with whatever the city regulates, because I am happy to do so. But I also know that with regulations, it's hard because there are so many different circumstances. And the owner-occupied piece is one of them. We're just purchasing another home because we found out that the home that we've originally purchased, now that it's kind of split up into two, we don't have enough space for our family because my nephew's now coming to live with us and go to college in the area. And so we bought another home. But keeping that in mind, it's a three-bedroom upstairs, so we'll be living there. And then downstairs, we'll be renting that basement as well as our hope. And so the other house, it's literally miles away. I am always within, I have never had a smartphone until I became an Airbnb host, because I found the need to be connected to my guests. And when we do travel abroad, or if we're not in the area, if we're not within 10 minutes of being in our house, our family, this has become a family thing. Everybody makes fun of us on some quirky level, just like Portlandia. You're crazy. Your community, like sharing, this is weird. But they all participate. And so my father-in-law, who lives five blocks down the road, he's there at a moment's notice. My sister-in-law helps clean and helps us turn it over because it's, again, a lot of work. And so it's given our entire family something to do and participate in. So
that's great.
I'm really sorry. No. It sucks to be you guys to try to decide this.
Thank you. We don't think so, but thank you.
The next three are Elise Wagner, Sue Carter Law, and Naomi E. Campbell. And they will be followed by David Laws, Eric Steinmeier, and Alexandra Favela.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. Yeah, you've heard from my husband earlier, Bob Lau, and I do want to start by saying how much we appreciate the time and the effort that you've put into this. It's very well thought out. After listening to all the testimony, I don't want to repeat the same kind of experiences. I mean, you've heard about how Airbnb or short-term rentaling has allowed people to keep their homes or take care of an elderly parent in a home, meet people from all over the world, that there's no crime reported and very few complaints. What I would encourage here is that you don't delay passing the regulations that are up right now. That's the baby step. I think what this has allowed to happen is to have the bigger issues come forward that need to be discussed at a later time under a different policy circumstance. Why hold off on this minor change? Take more time on the larger issue of the apartments, the non-owner occupied, and the vacation homes. You know, that is a bigger issue. I want to support the sharing economy that we've all been talking about. The short-term rentals are very different than the vacation rentals, the hotels, and the B&Bs. They offer a different experience to the visitors in Portland. And I think the vacation rentals and the non-owner occupied, we have a place in Cannon Beach that we pay taxes for. It's allowed. It's licensed. And so that's a different kind of licensing. The last thing I want to say is that under the inspections, I believe, and I did send a letter around that, I believe that the long-term rentals aren't inspected, that you should probably have random inspections to start off with and make sure that there is a hold harmless agreement for the city, that people sign that they have insurance, escape routes, and smoke alarms. And try it this way to see how it works. And it can always be, you know, changed, added on, re-regulated. But start with what you have. I like your every 10 years. But what I'm afraid of is if you make too many guidelines, too many regulations, and over-regulate it, you're going to have still people flying under the radar. And it's going to be more and more so. So keep it simple and start off and evaluate it, keep data on it, and then move towards the bigger issues.
Well, Sue, I want to thank you and Bob. I don't know if everybody's aware that it was Sue and Bob who made the rounds of City Hall and made me aware of this issue 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. And we have since then had 30-day or more renters. One lady works at Providence part-time, and there's no hotels near there. And I've heard other people that live near hospitals like St. Vincent that have visitors. And so it has been okay for us to rent 30 days or more. But I still believe in some of the causes that people have brought up, the need. So thank you for listening.
Thanks. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Elise Wagner, and I am an Airbnb host in North Portland in the Overlook neighborhood. And I have been a working artist in Portland for 30 years or so. I've lived in every single quadrant of the city, and I've just watched it grow, and it's just been incredible. So I have really enjoyed being an Airbnb host just simply on the level of being an ambassador to the city and feeding the economy by telling people where to go, what to do. I love hearing my guests' stories about, you know, where they go. And on the other end of it, I am a self-employed artist, and I have a business at my house, and I teach, and I attract people to my classes from all over the world. So it has a dual component of also being able to provide space for my students to stay with me at my house, and it's helped me keep my house in a big way. So it's been a nice supplemental income to go with my other someone said earlier, engineering ideas to survive or whatever. I think that I've been resourceful, and Airbnb has helped me be a resource. I'm not too keen on the inspections, but especially if they cost a lot of taxpayer dollars to perform. But I feel that minimal inspection of the quality of the room would be good, and I'm good with anything that we can come up with to come to a reasonable agreement on this.
Okay.
Thank you all for taking the time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Naomi Campbell, and I'm a small business owner and a homeowner in the King neighborhood. I've been an Airbnb host for 3 years. And it's truly enriched my life and my home. And I think my neighbors would say it's enriched the neighborhood as well. I won't repeat how it's supported businesses in the area and so on. In doing this, I enjoyed it so much that I did look into getting a second residence to sort of keep the spirit going into another a building maybe even closer to where the tourism likes to occur, but found to do it in a warm environment that I've become accustomed to with Airbnb, it was completely cost prohibitive to go the hotel-motel route without.
Right.
Even looking into buying a larger house to do the bed and breakfast, although, you know, initially it looks like it's a low charge, asking around, most people paid on the low end, when all neighbors were happy with the situation, $15,000, and then on the higher end up to $30,000 to get the bed and breakfast. Well, that's, you know, the permit so that you can have more than two bedrooms. Although I agree that this would be a great opportunity, I mean, it ideally will move along the one to two bedroom situation as fast as possible. I do hope that this is an opportunity to re-examine the entry fees to be able to host over 2 bedrooms and does not have such prohibitive fees and inspections. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, all three.
Okay. Next three are David Laws, Eric Steinmeier, and Alexandra Favela. And they will be followed by Jessica Garay, Michelle Acuyavella, I believe it is, and Mika Chalazde.
Good afternoon. Go ahead.
I'm David Laws, and I live in the Boise Elliott neighborhood. I have a complex of houses that are a cluster of 4 houses, and I live in one of them. And 3 of them are long-term, and then a year and a half ago, we started an Airbnb unit in the basement of one of the rental units. I won't repeat what everyone else has said, but it's been a fantastic experience, and we met many wonderful people. What I'd kind of like to go into is that I feel that the balance between short-term and long-term are very beneficial, and that they kind of complement each other. So I realize there's a shortage in rentals in the Portland area, but I also feel that if we look at it in a way that that we're not taking away from rental units, and so if we're in a non-owner-occupied space and we're not taking away from a rental unit that was pre-existing and we're adding additional units such as an ADU, that possibly we could look at adding this to the recap that rental units could possibly have short-term mixed with a long-term unit. And especially in my situation, I think each situation is different with everyone who's been up here. We're right there at the house. We're there for people all the time. So it's basically like we're living in that house. And if we're not there, our tenants are helping out with the unit. And so we kind of operate as a big community in our situation because of the cluster of houses. So one of the tenants that live above the unit actually helps to clean and is there if I can't be there. But like people have said, with smartphones these days, we're pretty much in contact with everyone that's there all the time anyway. And I think also to add that there's a benefit to the long-term rentals in that because of the short-term rental, we're able to subsidize the rent for the long-term rentals. And so we're able to rent for less for our long-term tenants than we're able to rent. We would be otherwise because we're able to cover it through our short-term rentals. So, thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Steinmeier. I am a renter and an Airbnb host. I'm here to urge you to work to revise this ordinance, to remove these inspections, and to protect the right of renters to take part in the Airbnb process in Portland. Commissioner Fish, I support your notion earlier of a disclosure to Airbnb renters. I think that would be the simplest way to address a lot of the concerns here. I've been going through a divorce, and my former wife and I are faced with maintaining a life for our children while maintaining separate households. Airbnb has provided an offset to our expenses and has allowed us to keep our home so that our children do not lose their sense of space and place through this process. By the way, Mayor Hales, I live around the corner from you, so I'm sure you're somewhat familiar with the property tax burden that we're carrying at this point in time. I find any proposal that restricts this avenue to generate income and limits the right of renters a bit tone deaf at a time when incomes are not keeping up with inflation in the best of circumstances. I believe that it is inconsistent to be a city that supports livable incomes while supporting a provision that limits how those incomes are generated. I believe it is not consistent with our civic values to support affordable housing while proposing a provision that would take away an avenue that families have to afford that very housing. By the way, my current unit that I'm renting has a full fire suppression system and is immaculately up to code. I support the goals of the ordinance. It clarifies the legality of this activity, but prohibiting renters and those in condos from participating is inconsistent with our values of inclusion for all citizens regardless of their financial situations. Please send this back to Planning and Sustainability to revise this proposal to allow renters and condo dwellers to participate in a source of income that allows them to pay their rising rents. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Alejandra Favela, and I live in the Clinton neighborhood. And thank you for the opportunity to speak. And thank you to everybody that's shared your testimonies. It's been really interesting for me to see what a broad and wide-ranging community this is. I want to share a quote from one of our renters because I think it'll give you a good sense of what it's like to stay at a place in Portland. And this is pretty indicative of the kind of comments that we get. Great location, gracious host, and comfortable apartment. This place is a gem. One of the reasons why I love Airbnb is because I want to live like a local during my vacation. And this Portland pad provided everything we needed to make that happen. The kitchen was stocked with a few items so that we begin our day with a nice cup of coffee, granola, and yogurt when we headed out on Alejandra and Tim's loaner bikes to do our own bike brew tour. This location is pretty perfect. Awesome grocery store 2 blocks away. Very good bars on nearby Clinton Street where the locals hang out. Rock star worthy restaurants and bars on Division Street. And easy access to public transportation so that you don't have to take a cab to the airport. Alejandra was friendly, helpful, and easy to contact in case we had a question. I think that gives you a good sense of what a lot of people have already said, but the people that stay with us are a mix of out-of-towners and people that are also are moving in Portland, people that have moved away and want to come back to the neighborhood. They support we've heard from all the local businesses, thanks for sending people our way. If there is one downside, I think more people will move to Portland after having their Airbnb experiences. And then the other thing that hasn't been mentioned is we encourage people to stay with their dogs. That's something that's important to us. When we travel, we like to bring our dog. We always use Airbnb when we travel. And so I think it's just a niche for people that wouldn't otherwise, that are not going to stay in a hotel. They want to be in a neighborhood. They want to know what it's like to live like a Portlander. One thing I would like to say, though, is that I think there is a big variety of people's situations. I would urge you to move forward with the proposal now and then amend the other pieces later. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you all.
Next three are Jessica Gary, Michelle Aquavala, I believe it is, and Mika Chalazde, and Deb Bauer. Come on up if I've called your name there. And how about Molly Turner?
Hey.
Okay, why don't you two go ahead, and then she can queue up some more for the next
one. Okay. Ashley Henry, Marion Hayes, and Tamara Kennedy Hill will be next.
Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Michelle Aquavella. I am the president of the Vacation Rental Managers Association of Washington. I'm a Seattle resident, and I own a business property managing vacation rentals in Seattle, Washington. But I'm here today as a tourist of your fine city who was here recently over Memorial Day weekend. Met two friends from Eugene here in Portland, and we sought a private vacation rental home to stay in for our visit. Unfortunately, we were unable to locate one that we could stay in. When I'm traveling, I seek a short-term rental, a fully furnished private home so that we can relax, spend quality time together with a private living room and a kitchen. Whether that's traveling with other couples or traveling with my 5 children, hotels just aren't an option for that kind of travel, especially with little kids having a kitchen, having access to their snacks, to the foods that they're particular for. We have several picky kids, so it makes traveling a lot easier. And I can't stress enough that this is just a different subset of traveler. I won't come to Portland with my kids because I won't sleep in a hotel room with 5 kids. We'd have to rent multiple hotel rooms. They're too young to be left alone in their own rooms. Having a living room where they can sit around and watch a movie at the end of the day, and like I said, having access to a kitchen so that I can feed them, it allows for a completely different experience, a much more local experience. That's another way I like to travel is I like to get into the neighborhoods. I like to be a part of the community. They allow for privacy that you're not going to get in this Airbnb model where you're going to be able to rent just 1 or 2 bedrooms within someone's home. I want my own private space. And staying in a hotel room for us is the equivalent to hanging out in each other's bedrooms. There just isn't space. There's dirty clothes lying around. Please carefully consider the impacts of any regulations you create regarding short-term rentals in Portland. Portland is a world-class city and a popular tourist destination, and I don't want to see you shortchange yourselves by not allowing a very popular option of renting an entire home or apartment as a short-term rental. And I would ask that you hold off on taking any action until you've heard from the entire short-term rental community, which you're starting to hear from today, including vacation rentals. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Deb Bauer, and a little bit about me. I'm a baby boomer. You might be able to tell by looking at me. Moved to Portland in 2000, and I love the place. I've lived in 8 states and 13 cities, and this is my fave. I'm staying, guys, not moving again. Some things I wanted to talk about. One of the things that Catherine mentioned earlier today was about the freedom to let the market evolve. And I thought that really struck me because that's kind of what we're deciding. How do we let this kind of short-term rental market evolve? How much control do we want to have? How much kind of input do we want to have? I've learned a lot today. I was not aware of how many vacation homes there were that were not being rented or the things that are under the radar. And I feel as though my main thing that I want to talk about today is the inspection issue. I think I'm looking for parity. Right now we are on a complaint basis, mostly in the city of Portland. We've got a little bit higher vigilance between 82nd Street out to the border of Gresham. And oh, by the way, I live out in the Palhurst area near Pal Butte Park. I've been doing Airbnb for almost 2 years, so, and I love it, and I can tell you all the good stuff everybody said I agree with, I'm there. But the inspection things, it's like right now, if we are going to be looking at focusing on the 1,600 properties that are currently listed, a lot of those properties don't have listings. I don't know, have any of you looked very long on the Airbnb websites? Are you familiar with what's out there and that kind of thing? One of the things I always check is I look at properties, and then I look at their calendars. A lot of them are vacant because their price might be too high. Maybe the pictures, they look like they have dorm rooms and travelers don't want to stay in a dorm room. Or maybe they do. I don't know. But a lot of them don't. So they just pass. They go on to something that looks the way they want. And they leave reviews. If they like the place, they leave their good reviews. Most people think that they're too glowing to be real. They think that they're people are just making this stuff up, but they're really not. I have 53 positive reviews. Everyone is from a person who stayed with me. I'm really pleased with it. There's a lot of people here that have many more reviews than that, and that's just a part of it. But I'm thinking we either should inspect every rental in Portland, including all the vacation homes that are going to be put on, if we can agree to have something like that, or none of them. The random check is a very good idea. Gresham does that currently, where they notify the landlord, they notify the tenants, and they do have a randomized system. The expense of doing everybody seems a little outrageous to me, and you can look at the pictures of our houses on the sites, and they're pretty cool. Anyway, that's all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Hales and the commissioners, for considering short-term rentals today. And taking the time to hear from members of the Airbnb community, of which there are many. I promised Airbnb hosts that didn't want to speak that I'd give them a chance to be recognized. So if you're an Airbnb member in the audience, would you please raise your hand? I know a lot of folks have left. Thank you.
And Molly, what's your name in the record?
My name is Molly Turner. I'm the Director of Civics for Airbnb. So I'm speaking today on behalf of over 1,500 Portland residents who rent their homes to visitors through Airbnb, and over 30,000 Portland residents who travel with Airbnb throughout the world. The members of this community are leaders in a new sharing economy, a movement that is changing how resources are used, how hospitality is exchanged, how residents are empowered, and how new economic opportunities are accessed, all values that are at the heart of Portland. Our host community in Portland is radically different than traditional vacation rental or corporate housing operators. 84% of hosts in Portland rent their primary residence, their own home, occasionally. 40% of hosts earn below median household income in their primary occupation. That's why this supplemental income earned on Airbnb is so important. It helps them afford Portland's rising cost of living while investing more in their homes, pursuing new careers, paying off loans, and as we've heard today, avoiding eviction, foreclosure, and pursuing their dreams. Travelers use Airbnb because they seek authentic local experiences that Portland residents provide. They want to live like locals. Airbnb guests enjoy exploring diverse neighborhoods of the city, learning about Portland's cultural heritage, and getting to know its residents. Today, this activity is not clearly regulated. That is why we applaud the city leaders and the Planning Bureau for proposing this new policy. We've raised two issues of concern for the Airbnb community: mandatory bedroom inspections and the exclusion of apartments and condominiums, which frankly, we see as simply not equitable. We thank the council for considering our suggestions. By adopting this proposal with our recommendations, Portland would become a true leader of the global sharing economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Before I call the next one, was there a Jessica from Foster Powell, Garay, I think was last name, or a Mika, or maybe it's McCaw from Stevens, Washington? Then we'll go with Ashley Henry, Marion Haynes, and Tamara Kennedy Hill. And they'll be followed by Amy Taylor, Bill Kabizerman, and Meredy Pabst. With Ashley Henry, Marion Haynes, and Tamara Kennedy Hill. Okay, let's go with Amy Taylor. If you're here, you can come on up.
I want you to go ahead then.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, council members. My name is Marion Haynes, and I'm here representing the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance is thrilled that Airbnb has chosen Portland as the site for its new North American headquarters, and it just makes sense that the city offers a legal path for those that are here using their services. Airbnb provides a model that is complementary to existing visitor accommodation options and provides opportunities for visitors to stay in areas of the city that don't have some of those other hotel, motel type of options. More visitors to Portland supports the local economy, and guests are frequenting local businesses in neighborhoods throughout the city where hosts have guests come and stay with them. Given the popularity and increased use of Airbnb, it does make sense to formally legalize short-term rentals, and we support the city's action in that regard. We appreciate Airbnb's commitment to collect and remit taxes on behalf of the hosts, as well as their commitment to safety and ensuring they're a good community partner. So the Alliance supports the city taking action to ensure a responsible and legal path for all short-term rentals in the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask, since you're here, if you guys have an opinion on the piece that we're not, it's not before us, and that is the multifamily and the condos?
We haven't taken a formal position on that issue, but it seems reasonable to have an ongoing discussion about that, given, you know, that there would be discrepancies in how different types of housing stocks are treated. But we'd have to take that issue up specifically.
Thanks.
Could I ask you to just talk about sort of the philosophical question of what the proper level of regulation is for businesses that are similar but different? I mean, obviously you're going to have some regulation of inspections of hotels. And at what, I mean, can you help us figure out at what point an inoffensive little thing that shouldn't require any regulation becomes a hotel? That's also sort of a fair competition issue. I mean, to what extent do we allow people who have very limited regulation to compete with entities that have lots of regulation?
Right. And Commissioner Novick, I think that there are distinctions between hotels and the type of options that are being dealt with here. We didn't take up exactly all of these issues and some of the detail that's now coming out, and I think we would need to do that with some of our members who are using these types of options and who also are hotels. I mean, I think that it makes sense that there are varying degrees. There are totally different sizes and scopes that we're talking about dealing with here. And so I think these are really legitimate, good questions that deserve a lot of analysis and discussion about what's right. I can't give you that right answer right now.
You know, what, Commissioner Novick, one thing that I'm learning, I think, from listening to testimony is I'm not entirely sure they do compete. What I'm kind of getting a sense of is there's a whole different niche of service available to people. And I was telling Dan, this arrangement does not sound dissimilar to what happens when my family goes to Cordova and stays with Patty's family. The only difference is no money exchanges, but we stay in someone's bedroom, extra bedroom or basement. They tell us all the great restaurants to go to. It's much more fun than staying in a hotel. It's more affordable. It just happens to be family. Here I've been struck by how many people have said that they actually view themselves as being an extended family in terms of their renters. But I'd like to look at the data on that because you know, our downtown hotels are experiencing tremendous occupancy levels. We're seeing a surge in revenue. Hilton now is announcing they want to build a new luxury hotel downtown. I don't know to what extent they do compete. That's an interesting question.
I mean, to me, it seems intuitive that they must compete. I mean, it's ultimately, it's paying to stay somewhere. And if you're aware of all the options, I would think that you would think about, okay, do I want to stay in a hotel? Do I want to stay in B&B? Do I want to stay in Airbnb?
Well, I'll just use my family as an example. When we travel with two kids, we generally cannot afford to stay in a hotel because we cannot afford to take two rooms. It just there's a practical issue there, and we're not going to take one room and then have everybody. You know, it sort of defeats the purpose of the vacation. So,
but this
is a family hour here. We're just saying, you know. But anyway,
but theoretically, you might travel. I mean, if this kind of option weren't available, you might travel a third as much and take the two rooms in a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's probably partial overlap, but probably quite a bit that's not. Okay, you're on.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hills and commissioners. My name is Tamara Kennedy Hill. I am Director of Community Relations at Travel Portland. And as many of you know, Travel Portland is the Convention and Visitors Bureau of the City of Portland, and our mission is to strengthen the region's economy by marketing Portland as a preferred destination for travelers. So as this conversation is evolving, you're seeing that many travelers, some travelers, and often repeat travelers, are looking at non-traditional types of travel experiences and more community-based travel experiences. In many cases, you've heard they want to live like a local, so this is a different demand that we're seeing in the marketplace, and this trend for short-term rentals like Airbnb, we're seeing lots of rising increase. For this reason, Travel Portland, along with the city, has been very proud to have Airbnb collection result in our city being the first shared city. And in this model, where Airbnb is in compliance with paying and host paying lodging taxes, of which Travel Portland receives 1% to do further tourism promotion, allows us to more directly and robustly work with Airbnb to maximize the collective opportunities for our region. We are in regular communication with Airbnb and the marketing side to really analyze the top trends and demand to see how this growth is for different audiences and different travelers, and also supporting small tourism businesses. We've seen that this new business model has the potential to grow and diversify tourism and generate increased economic opportunities for Portland neighborhoods and all residents alike. So we are in support of regulation, but we also want to make sure that there's a sense of reasonableness around the compliance. We know that the city has to grapple with how to figure this out. We also know that Portland does a great job of modeling best practice, and so we look forward to supporting that, and we're in support of this process. So thank you.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Bill Kweisman. I'm an attorney here at Garvey Schubert Behr in Portland, and I was contacted by Airbnb to talk about the motel and apartment condo issue. I may ask for your indulgence for a little extra time as I talk about it, because although it's a small issue, the technical aspects of it gets a little complicated. So a little background. I am the past chair of the Oregon Government Law section of the bar. I've been working with cities and individuals in development, land use, building codes, other issues for over a decade and a half in Oregon, advising cities about this type of issue. Airbnb contacted me a little while ago. As I understand it, recap started, this was one of the issues that came up, the short-term rentals. And the notices that came out for the hearings to the neighborhood groups, to the Planning and Sustainability Committee, indicated that it was houses, apartments, condominiums. And I heard staff indicate, I forgot to mention, I want to thank staff. They've actually done a great job shepherding a big project through really good work on it. But heard staff say that they pulled this aspect of it from the agenda when this issue was identified internally. I don't think that pulling was ever really made public. And I guess what I'm getting at is the question of renting in apartments and condominiums doesn't strike me as something that's been a policy issue. It's really a technical issue. The policy issues I've heard is equity. Should we really prevent apartment owners from doing it? And frankly, the complaints that we've heard with the whole concept of short-term rentals has been more from single-family residential. You don't hear multifamily dwelling residents come in and say, wait a second, there's a problem here. So it's really a technical legal issue more than a policy issue. In any event, somewhere along the way, this issue got raised and said, you know, apartments and condominiums, multifamily dwellings are built to a different standard, and so we may have an issue here. And if I can leave you with one message here, it's that you don't really have a technical building code issue. What you have is a policy issue and a policy choice for you to make about whether you want to allow apartment dwellers to participate in this. The place you start in this is, what exactly does a short-term rental ordinance that you're considering authorize? And if you look at that, Chapter 33207, which is a new code that you're adopting, defines them as accessory short-term rentals and specifically says these are accessory uses. And your code defines what an accessory use is, and that is an use or activity that is a subordinate part of a primary use that is clearly incidental to a primary use on the site. So you've got the primary use, household living, with an accessory use where you rent out bedrooms. Not a primary use. This is incidental. So with that background, we turn to the building code. And there's staff talked a little bit about the different building codes that govern residential specialty code, sometimes called the CABO code, and the structural specialty code, which governs most structures in the state. The key point, without getting into too many details, is that apartments and condominiums, multifamily dwellings, are classified as an R2 occupancy. And an R2 occupancy is defined as follows. Residential occupancies containing sleeping units or more than two dwelling units where the occupants are primarily permanent in nature. So that's the key that ties these things together. What's the primary use here? And the zoning code and the building code match up. So long as the short-term rentals remain an accessory use to the primary household living use in the zoning code, they qualify as an R2 occupancy because the occupants are primarily permanent in nature. So I don't see a technical conflict here. If, in fact, you know, one of the things that the staff discussed with the R3 zone was the lodging house, you know, that's allowed in an R3 zone. That would be an issue in the R2 zone because a lodging house, you have a primary use of renting these spaces out. But what you have is an accessory use where the primary use remains household living, and this is incidental to that primary use. You heard a lot of stories about people, and what you hear about people who really keep this as part of their house. They treat Portland, their homes, as an important part of what they are. They're joining a community, inviting people in, but that community starts with their house and where they live. You know, and sort of stepping back from the technical aspects, policy level somewhat supports this as well. When you look at the building code, you've got a series of occupancies, R4, R3, R2, R1, each of them getting progressively more protective of safety. Single-family dwellings are R3. Apartments, condominiums, multifamily are R2. So you already have a higher level of safety protection in those multifamily dwellings than you do in an R3. So, you know, to a certain extent, that also helps to protect the safety issue that you're concerned about. So, you know, I think you have a better safety standard. With the equity issues that you've heard some discussion of about apartments versus residential homes, I think that it really, there isn't a technical issue. There isn't a policy issue. There's no reason not to have the amendment go back to the way it was originally proposed to allow these short-term rentals in apartments and condominiums.
Do you mind if I ask you? We had, I'm not entirely sure where policy and technical start and end, but I appreciate the briefing you gave us. Do you have a view about row houses that are technically condos? That are organized as condos, but otherwise look like a series of single-family homes?
My understanding is that generally, and this is very general, is that those tend to be built to R3 standards because you've got individual homes on those. You do occasionally get R2 or even R1. There was actually an issue I was involved in out in Fairview in the town center where those were actually built. They are town center, there's a series of townhomes that were advertised as live workspace, and they ended up somebody tried to open a candy store in their home, and they ran into issues because it was built to an R2 standard instead of an R1 standard, and because they were inviting people in, they had that issue because they're actually opening a store where the primary use was going to be the candy store. And I guess my message, my response to you would really be, it depends. You know, the classic lawyer response. Typically, those end up being built to R2 standards, but there are situations where they do have R3 standards, depending on a variety of factors that go into them.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, should it make a difference? Someone testified about mixed use, business on the first floor and apartments above. Should that make a difference in our analysis?
And I want to be careful not to mix the building code and zoning code. For zoning code, I don't think it should make any difference whatsoever. Where you get into the problem is a building code where you have mixed use and how you deal with dual occupancies in those situations. And my guess is from hearing that testimony is she has an older house that was later converted into multiple units, and then a commercial aspect was added to it, or perhaps a commercial aspect was there originally. And so you get into some real complex questions of what do you have to do to upgrade it. So in terms of mixed use, you're going to have to worry about dual occupancies. And, you know, these are some complicated fact situations. You heard the stories. There's a whole variety of different things that different people do, and it always surprises me just how innovative people can be. But that's what building codes and planning really deal with on a day-to-day basis. You've got to make rules that are intelligible and set the guidelines, but then that interstitial where those lines get drawn in individual circumstances is where the complexity and why you have the staff that you have. It's more at the broader level where you're saying, does it make sense for us to have apartments and condominiums available to participate in the short-term rentals, that the decision that you're really faced with today?
And it's your opinion that's solely a policy call on our part?
That's my opinion, that it's solely a policy call based on, you know, the what's the primary use, and your code says the primary use must remain, you know, household living.
And colleagues, I think there's some disagreement about that with our city attorney, so I would suggest we want to get some information from the city attorney later.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank all three of you. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to keep going a bit longer. I guess I want to check with the council. My intention is to go to 5:30 and try to get everybody in, but I do want to extend some courtesies because I see we have at least one more member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission here who may want to testify, and I want to extend the opportunity for neighborhood representatives. I don't think we've heard from any of the neighborhood associations, and I see at least one or two neighborhood representatives here.
This is going to go to a second hearing or second reading?
It's going to go to at least a second reading, if not get carried over.
Reason I raise that is that I think one of the benefits of this hearing is we're going to have a lot of follow-up questions.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of questions.
And I guess at some point we'll look for guidance. Do you want us to do that in the record today or with follow-up emails? And that's partly about whether we're going to go to a second reading or a second hearing.
Yeah, I would like to go to a second hearing. I don't think there's no reason to rush here. And I've got a long list of questions. I suspect others do as well. So we might want to go into something of a work session later with people's notes in the meantime, because rather than at the end of a long hearing try to blurt everything out to Susan and her staff, it might be better to do that in a more orderly way. And again, I bet they'd appreciate that too. Okay.
Mayor, so, I have to leave at 5.
Okay, so in the meantime, before we start losing people, let's do see if Andre, do you want to speak? Okay, well, you're a Planning and Sustainability Commission member. We're going to extend that to you. And are there some neighborhood association representatives that want to speak? I saw Mr. McCullough here. Yes, please, you two, come on up. We want to give our stellar volunteers on the commission and at the neighborhood level a chance to speak, because they're so highly paid for all the hours they put in on behalf of the community. Andre, let's start with you.
Andre Baugh, Planning Sustainability Chair. I wanted today to come, not as part of the commission you heard initially with Catherine Schultz, who I think did a good job of explaining our, but explain my no vote and talk to you about why we should regulate this platform. And first, my no vote, I was not against this platform, the short-term rentals. I believe we should regulate it. I believe we should move forward, and you should pass what you have today. Certainly, there's been a lot of issues raised, some that were not raised in front of us, that maybe that's recap 7, 8, 9, I'm not sure. But those should probably maybe come back to us. I'll leave staff to figure that out. But a couple of things that I wanted to bring before you is, one, I wanted to thank Amanda for the good to come back. One of my concerns was you should come back and look at this and see what it's doing to affordable housing. And so the ability for Portland State or whoever you choose to work with BPS to study this issue and see the impact on affordable housing. You heard today actually testimony from Airbnb people that show the example of the impact on affordable housing, because people, the lady that said she earned $170 a night from her housing, it's a good economic model. You can earn $5,000 from that house a month. You can't earn that if you put someone in there long-term for a lease. So that's taking away, I'm not saying it's affordable housing, it's taken away from the housing market. And we heard other examples of that where people were renting short-term rentals for more than you can rent on a monthly basis. We need to understand that problem because we have a tremendous asset in an investment in affordable housing in the city. And if the economic model, however small, does impact that affordable housing, we may need to do more regulation or less. I'm not sure, but we can't, and I think coming back in a couple of years is the right thing. I would just add one more thing in terms of issues is that on the revenue side, this is not part of what you're looking at today, but from the revenue side, if you're going to study it, ensure that the platform provides with their information that they provide or the revenue that they provide to the city of Portland a list that includes all the addresses that provided the taxes and the total amount of revenue per address so that you have some data to study the problem with and come back with some actionable steps of whether or not this is impacting our housing market or not. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for all your service.
I'm just curious, why would that even be an issue?
I don't believe they're supplying that today. That the platform, including Airbnb, is supplying that information.
Not supplying us the names of the
Not, I don't want the names, the addresses, and the amount of that address that it generated.
And under those circumstances, how does the city verify the numbers?
Well, we have a permit. We have a permit, and that would allow us some audit capabilities of everybody that's generating. We'd also be able to determine if we have people that are generating taxes without a permit, assume that, you know, the collection of that on some platforms, Airbnb being one, collects the taxes for the hosts. Some others don't collect those taxes.
Okay. Thanks, Andre. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, next time.
Yes, you are.
Robert McCullough, I'm representing Southeast Uplift. Southeast Uplift has reviewed this very carefully. It's come up through the land use committees, up to the board. Our recommendation is delay. It is not opposition. But there are many questions that are being raised that haven't been addressed here today. Now, I've heard a lot of individuals that are eager to find extra income, and certainly we can respect that. But our policy over the years has been to provide neighborhoods that are separated from commercial zones. And this particular change sweeps that away. We will have commercial activities throughout. Now, I like the point by the lawyer who noted that the principal use of the home has to be a home. But a good section of the people who talked today were actually viewing this as an entrepreneurial activity. The one woman who wanted to buy a second house, perhaps she was going to use both as her principal house. But I think, frankly, we are talking about eliminating something that was a central part of the 1980 comprehensive plan and certainly the Portland plan. Now, one of my weaknesses in life is that I've been known to sometimes make a joke, and I apologize for that. And they're economist jokes, which makes them very boring. But having taught college for many years, I've found that metaphors sometimes dominate more than sober argument. So while I was waiting here, I booked an apartment 10 blocks from your house and mine in the name of Hannibal Lecter.
That's a terrible joke. But
yes, I know. It cost me $57, so I did it legitimately. I did not take the apartment that was in the middle of the Brooklyn Yard. Now, I thought there was a reason not to take that because that's probably fraudulent. There's very little checking and cross-checking any reasonably intelligent individual can pierce the Airbnb security. I did by the simple expedient of typing, and a villain would probably do it better than I. I left my own email address, so you can track me down if you want to know what Hannibal Lecter is doing next week. But the point I'm making is on that is that we're taking a fairly heady shift away from our traditional values. Southeast Uplift wants the time to argue this through and figure out where we have to be on inspections, very critical, where we have to be on security. You remember some years ago I opposed the vegan strippers who were going to move into Selwood, successfully, by the way. But the question is, will you actually want to live next to these young women who have moved into your neighborhood? Now, they're clean living. We know that. They're vegans. And they're well-behaved, I'm certain. I presume they have a nun-like presence when they're away from their job. But the reason why we've traditionally had this division between commercial and residential is because people like to have some control over their lives that they might lose here. So our plea is not to reject it. We haven't gotten that far. But RICAP was really not designed for a major change in policy, and this is a major change in policy. It's a step towards Houston, where anything goes, and a step away from Portland, which was a leader in land use. So, as I said in my letter to you a week or so ago, please measure twice before you cut once. Thank you.
Yeah, no.
Thank you, Robert.
Since you've waited so long, do you mind taking a question or two?
I'm happy to.
So I'm interested in where you see that line in terms of commercial activity. And let me take my neighborhood, which is in the Grant Park area. Theoretically, everybody on my street could rent out their home.
As a rental house.
As a rental house.
Right.
And we could each choose to rent it to a group of students or vegan whatever.
Who would be better looking?
So I'm just curious from your, and I ask this seriously because you've given very serious testimony. What is the difference between that and the concern you have here?
Well, I think it is a solid concern, and we don't have a very good line. In East Warren, we had four young bachelors, and they had a better time than their neighbors. There was some uproar, and there's some complaints about noise. And I think our controls are such that having a single long-term rental like the four bachelors and having 100 different people show up in the house next to you does seem to be a difference in change to me. You know, this issue of property rights is a tangled one for us. We protect neighborhoods because of the single major investment of the American family. In fact, for many families, they're the only investment. And if, in fact, we change those rules rapidly, we're going to see a lot of people who are very startled. The families that were next to the four bachelors viewed that as a very deleterious event. Four bachelors, by the way, finally moved to a more fun neighborhood. I don't think they found us exciting enough. But the issue of having a commercial enterprise that is running through daily rentals, it's a very different application. And the family that's invested their life savings in that house might view that as pretty scary.
Well, I'm not here to argue the point, and you make a lot of very interesting points. I was struck by someone who testified about the person that buys a home and then rents it out and perhaps has a less concern about its condition. And the person, we don't want to overgeneralize, but we've seen, we know that particular property owner in each of our neighborhoods. We know the person that doesn't put much into it and just rents it long term. We've also heard that the folks who are participating in this program have an incentive to maintain the high standards for their place because they're making quite a lot of money renting it out, and there's a built-in interest to continue to do so. So I appreciate your point. I'm not sure where the line is, and I'm not sure that we can generalize about who is a better neighbor.
I can't either. Southeast Uplift did not come with a rejection plea. We came with a study plea. This is a major change. It's beyond the scope of a traditional RICAP change. We're talking about commercial uses throughout the neighborhoods of Portland. Very significant change in that. We'd like some time to understand it better. The reason why I played over on the Airbnb side was not because I dislike them. I'm in business myself. But because I was interested in a question that I wondered, what control I had over the people coming into the neighborhood. Were they, in fact, the wonderful families we've heard described today? That's fine, obviously. Are they people that you don't know and might be scary? That's possible, too, and I'd like to know the answer to that. The question you ask is so good that I don't know the answer to it, but if I handed it to our land use committee, they would probably puzzle over it and bring you back a solid answer. They're smarter than I am, but they were also so smart they didn't sit here for 3 hours waiting to speak.
let me make a suggestion, and it's also a process suggestion. I want to make it while Commissioner Fritz is still here. It may or may not be the case that the RICAP process of routine tuning of the zoning code was the appropriate venue to take up this question, and that's why I think the commission and the staff quite rightly divided the issue in front of us today, which is that we have the bulk of these other changes, which you've heard nothing about, almost nothing about today, about which we have a high level of agreement and which should certainly, in my opinion, proceed. And then they have vetted this issue, or at least partially vetted this issue, by a long hearing at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, a lot of staff work, and now full engagement of the City Council. I would rather not circle back to the starting point. I would rather take us from here and extend this discussion rather than say, oh, this isn't right, do over, see you next year. So I'm not sure how long that process should be, or even exactly how it should look. But what I think it should be is further deliberation of the council with the advice of the commission and the staff and in engagement of the community, including Southeast Uplift and other coalitions, because now we're all paying attention to this issue and we're all grappling with the ambiguities of it. So while we're telling jokes, this reminded me of a long ago Gordon Shadburn utterance in which he said, boy, that really opened Pandora's can of worms. And we have. But having opened it, I think we probably ought to proceed and sort them out.
May I make one follow-up comment? Because I had the time to start my research, I actually counted the number of Airbnbs in the four neighborhoods surrounding mine. Of the 6,500 homes, we have 16 listed. I'm also counting the one in the middle of the Brooklyn rail yard, which I suspect needs a police inquiry, because I don't think those people will get their deposit back. But the issue is always in what comes to you as well-prepared, well-organized testimony. And sometimes the most honest testimony is testimony like mine, which is, this is a big change and we need a little bit more time to puzzle over it. We're not saying no. That was not the vote at Southeast Uplift. It was a unanimous vote at Southeast Uplift. And so everyone there said, frankly, oh my God, what will next year look like if we have commercial uses throughout all the neighborhoods?
Robert,
thank you.
Could I ask you one more question?
Sure.
How many economists does it take to change a light bulb?
Enough, you two.
Okay. We have three hands. The question is whether we're going to use this one, that one, or on the other hand. So
my understanding was the answer is none. The invisible hand doesn't.
Oh, boy. All right. We're going downhill fast. Thank you. Thank you,
Robert. Commissioner. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Follow that. See if you can.
Okay. My name is Steve Unger. I'm a member of the Irvington Community Association Land Use Committee, whose views, they say, I reflect. And I operate the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast, which makes me the only bed and breakfast operator who will actually speak here today. Today, we've heard three general points of view. First, from Airbnb and Airbnb hosts who want even less regulation than the minimum that's provided in this ordinance. Then we've heard, and surprisingly little, actually, compared to other hearings I've attended, from concerned neighbors who want a lot more regulation. And then there are